Drive, so go to kboo.fm/give today, or text KBOO to 44321. We only have a few days left to make our fall membership drive goal of $55,000. All donations received by October 28th will be matched dollar for dollar up to $14,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of donors. You make KBOO possible, so donate today. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for listening to volunteer-powered, community-supported KBOO Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is listener sponsored. That's right. 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. Step up during our last week and help us reach our goal of $55,000 for the fall membership drive. Contribute at kboo.fm/give by October 28th, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $14,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Donate and become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give right now, or by texting KBOO to 44321.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of the Dia de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st, from 12 to 10 p.m. at The Red on Salmon Street in Portland. Dia de los Muertos is an ancient celebration originating from the indigenous people of Mexico. Festivities will include altar creation, muertos face painting, sugar skull decorating, traditional Mexican food, and live musical performances. Again, that's the Dia de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st, from 12 to 10 p.m. at The Red on Salmon Street, A31 Southeast Salmon Street in Portland.
Born from challenge with a vision for future solutions, we are PDX Progressive Talk Radio, and we're talking to the leaders of government, nonprofits, and businesses seeking answers and having some success. Listen to us live at 7 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of each and every month as we seek to grow, learn, and progress. We are PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Good evening, Portland and beyond. My name is Sherry Morish, and I am standing in for Moses tonight and probably for the next few months. Today is October 25th, and you are listening to us live at 7 p.m. if you are listening to KBOO Community Radio. We have some news that you'll be interested in knowing. We hope that you'll continue listening to the show as we move forward. Moses is actually running for the 4th District in the new Portland governance under the new charter. So as you know, the Portland City Council is expanding. We'll have one mayor, 4 city commissioners, and 12 members of the city council representing 4 districts in Portland. So I'm going to explain some things that I found on portland.gov. And for those of you who might be interested in knowing a little bit more about how all of this is going to work. So Portland's new election system and form of government was proposed by the Charter Commission. It's a group of 20 community leaders appointed in December of 2020 to review the city's founding documents. The Charter Commission spent 18 months studying alternatives to the current form of government, and it was leading to community engagement processes with people across the city. So they were talking to local groups about what the new government should look like. And they did a lot of research across the nation about how different governments in different localities were working. Thousands of Portlanders voiced their opinions throughout the once a decade process via surveys, community listening sessions, public meetings, and written feedback. The proposal that went to the ballot was supported by 17 of 20 charter commissioners. So that in itself was hugely pivotal about in Portland's future and where we hope to see the city in the next 10 years, right? So in November 2022, 57% of Portland voters approved ballot measure 26-228, which includes ranked choice voting, geographic districts, a bigger city council, and new leadership roles. The city's been sending out phases of the plan. And if you remember, the KGW actually did a story on this and the Gap did a story on it, where they laid out the new organizational structure and who the mayor is going to supervise or who the subordinates of the mayor will be, and each of the districts and the bureaus, and how all of the organizational developments are happening within each bureau. So like water, operations, accounting, and so on. So the city's been sending out these phases to Portlanders and to give everybody an idea of how the plan is going to work out. So the city of Portland will host its first election using geographic districts and ranked choice voting in November of 2024. So it's not very far away, just a little over a year. And we're all really excited, especially around here at KBOO. There's been a lot of talk about it. Along the way, key milestones are going to be developed and laid out to ensure that the project stays on track. There's a work plan that's being developed and implemented. So here's the timeline. In November 2022, the transition begins. In early 2023, ranked choice voting implementation is underway. And in January 2023, an independent direct commission was appointed to begin establishing the geographic districts. A salary commission was appointed in March of 2023 to establish salaries for elected officials. Last month, in September, the new geographic districts were adopted and elected official salaries were established. And they were on the news today or yesterday, I believe it was this morning, they actually told us how much the mayor and city council were going to make. And unfortunately, everybody's making over $100,000, from the way it looked. I did not grab those numbers, and I apologize for that. In November of 2024, actually KGW listed those numbers, so you can go to kgw.com and they will have the salaries of all of the new commissioners there. Portland, in November 2024, Portland voters will select new leaders using ranked choice voting and geographic districts. The mayor and half of the city council will run for 4-year terms. The city auditor and the other half of the city council will run for initial 2-year terms. Then in January of 2025, so almost a year and a half from now, the new city council enters into the new form of government roles and responsibilities. So in the city's transition, based in the office of the chief administrator's office, a city project team is responsible for implementing voter-approved changes to the city's election system and form of government. The transition team includes a project manager, communications and civic engagement, diversity, equity, and inclusion, a budget office, and finance, human resources, and change management. The community engagement and participation section establishes that three community groups will be appointed to ensure the City of Portland implements voters' direction effectively and efficiently while advancing the city's values of equity and anti-terrorism. And it basically goes on and on and about the Independent District Commission, Salary Commission, and the Government Transition Advisory Committee, who will advise over the entire process. In addition to them, their ongoing engagement, community members will have opportunities to provide input to the public bodies throughout the transition. So they're trying to make us all feel the warm and fuzzies of this transition that we're going to see in Portland. And, you know, time will tell. Time will tell. And Moses is running for the city council seat in District 4. So I am taking over for the next few months. And that's why I sounded so nervous when I first started, because I got what I was going to say all mixed up. So I am taking over for a few months, and we want to wish Moses the best in his race. So I want to transition here a little bit in case you might have been working and maybe not necessarily paying attention to politics on the national stage. The last 3 weeks has been rather chaotic at the House of Representatives, as you're probably aware. Our fabulous Republican representatives at the House level decided to kick their speaker out. And that wasn't necessarily a bad decision, but it wasn't great because they had no backup, right? So they went through this whole process of Jim Jordan. Oh, boy. We really, really escaped some terrible things in the future with him not being the speaker. We missed a bullet on that one. So that's good. However, we got something vanilla here that's nasty, in my opinion, and you'll see why here in a minute. The new Speaker of the House, as of tonight, or you know, Eastern Time, is a man by a Louisiana rep by the name of Mike Johnson. And there's the most significant piece about this, I guess, is the fact that Trump actually endorsed this person. So yeah, that kind of gives you an idea. Before I move much further into this, I'm missing my opportunity to help the one place in the Portland universe that actually gives us all something awesome to think about on a daily basis. We are in the middle of our fall fundraiser here at KBOO. We're trying to raise $55,000. And we wanted to let our listeners know that your money goes to really good places when you donate to KBOO. So understanding the impact that we have in the community, we're volunteer powered. We have over 300 volunteers who support us every day. KBOO has trained thousands of people in how to make radio, all for free, thanks to the support we receive from members. We're independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio, and we are trying to push forward through our fall fundraising campaign to earn $55,000. So what you can do is you can go online to kboo.fm/give, and you can donate there on your mobile app on your phone. It's probably sitting in your hand right now. go on over to the KBOO website. You can pull up your Chrome or on your iPhones. I believe you have Surface, probably. Go on over to kboo.fm, click on that donate button, and there's another way you can help us by giving to our fall membership, our fall fundraising drive. You can text us, text KBOO, so that's KBOO, to 44321. And the final way, for those of you who like, tech is just not my thing, I want nothing to do with it, y'all can send a check. We do take paper. Mail to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, of course, 97214. So if you have a pen, and I said that too fast, it's KBOO. This is to send us a check. It can be a dollar. I mean, really, we're getting close, but we still have a little ways to go, and we have a few more days. So you can mail that check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And to all of you, all of our members who support us continually on an annual basis, we thank you. You have helped us so much, and we really, really appreciate all of your support. You have four ways to give: online, on the mobile app, via text, and send a check. And we do appreciate every single piece. So back to what I was talking about with Mr. Mike Johnson. So this guy here, he's a representative from Louisiana, Deep South. So tonight, as we're navigating through the intricacies of politics, we're going to discuss who is recently at the, you know, who's at the center stage in the hallowed halls of Congress. The new Speaker of the House, Representative Mike Johnson of Louisiana. So Mr. Johnson's no stranger to controversy. Here's where we're getting into the nitty-gritty of what he's all about. He's no stranger to controversy, nor is he unfamiliar with the art of pointed questioning. His tenure on the Judiciary Committee has been marked by fervent debate, particularly around polarizing issues such as abortion rights. So I'm sure many of you remember the hearing last year where he took the floor not just to voice his stance, but to challenge and perhaps to provoke. He posed a question in graphic and an extreme nature to Dr. Yashica Robinson, and I'm sorry if I spelled her name or said her name wrong. It's Yashica Robinson, and she was testifying in front of the Judiciary Committee. She's a staunch advocate for reproductive rights. His question to this doctor, this doctor who is committed to women's right to choose and to be able to have jurisdiction over their own being, this is the scenario he lays out. He says, do you support the right of women just seconds away from birthing a healthy child to have an abortion? Really? Like, that's even a thing in this nation? That was a poignant question meant to unsettle. It was meant to challenge Dr. Robinson in her capacity as a board member for Physicians for Reproductive Health. Responding, stating such a situation, in her response, she stated that in such a situation had never happened in her practice. It had never occurred as long as she's been practicing. So he comes back with unwavering ability to press on with this horrid scenario. So he says, never happened in your practice, ma'am, but it happens. How about if a child is halfway out of the birth canal? Is an abortion permissible then? Seriously, are you kidding me? He's asking these questions. A grown man with a wife and children, and he calls himself a Christian. He is asking this woman these questions. A professional in reproductive health, he is asking her these questions. And this is just not okay, right? So this question left the room hanging. It's a question that echoes the deep-seated divisions in our society on this issue, and that's just maybe, right? That's the lowest level. So anyway, I'm getting all worked up here. So next, you know, this is just, I wrote this whole thing out because having the show Moses isn't here. So usually I just run the board. So obviously I'm going to be a little bit nervous, right? So I thought I'll write this out. But now that I'm actually going through it, trying to make a conversation out of it is just making me mad. So what does this tell you about the new Speaker of the House? It tells us that he's unafraid, that he's willing to challenge the status quo. But it also raises questions. Questions about the role of extremists in our political discourse. We have seen years of that so far. It's about the line between provocation and dialogue. People like this are not serious. Let me tell you, people like this are simply there for the paycheck and to cause havoc wherever possible. Ladies and gentlemen, the gavel has been passed, and with it, the responsibility to navigate these tumultuous waters. How will Mr. Johnson wield his power? Will he be an unyielding force pushing against the tide, or will he find a way to bridge divides, to bring about the discourse in a robust and respectful manner? And, you know, I'm going to play, actually, what he said as his first speech on the House floor. So stick with me just a moment.
Here are three important ways to support your immune system. First, make sure you're eating a healthy and balanced diet with plenty of fruits and vegetables. Second, make sure you incorporate...
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you all. First, a few words of gratitude. I want to thank Leader Jeffries. I do look forward to working with you on behalf of the American people. I know we see things from very different points of view, but I know that in your heart you love and care about this country and you want to do what's right. And so we're going to find common ground there, all right? Speaker of the House, hail from our state. Listen, all the clerks and all the staff, you know, they're terribly overworked. This has been a grueling process, but they have served an integral role in keeping our republic, and we thank them for that service. I know we all do. I want to thank my dedicated wife of almost 25 years, Kelly. She's not here. We couldn't get a flight in time. This happened sort of suddenly. But we're going to celebrate soon. She spent the last couple of weeks on her knees in prayer to the Lord, and she's a little worn out. We all are. I want to thank our children, Michael and Hannah and Abby and Jack and Will. All of our children sacrifice. All of them do, and we know that. And there's not a lot of perks to being a member of Congress's kid, right? And so I want to thank all of your families as well for what they endure and what they've had to endure for the last few weeks. We've been here a while. Yeah. I want to thank my faithful mother, Jeannie Johnson, who bore me at the age of 17, and my brothers, Chris and Josh, and my sister, Laura, and all their families, and all of our extended family. In Louisiana, family's a big deal, and we got a bunch of them. I especially want to thank all the extraordinary people of the great state of Louisiana. We have never had a Speaker of the House hail from our state, and so they've been lifting us up. I thank the people of Louisiana for the opportunity to serve you in Congress, and I'm humbled by your continuous support. We will make you proud. To my colleagues, I want to thank you all for the trust that you have instilled in me to lead us in this historic and unprecedented moment that we're in. The challenge before us is great, but the time for action is now, and I will not let you down. I want to say to the American people, on behalf of all of us here, we hear you. We know the challenges you're facing. We know that that there's a lot going on in our country, domestically and abroad, and we are ready to get to work again to solve those problems, and we will. Our mission here is to serve you well, to restore the people's faith in this house, in this great and essential institution. My dad, it was mentioned, my dad was a firefighter. He was an assistant chief in the fire department in my hometown of Shreveport, Louisiana, a little town in northwest Louisiana. On September 17, 1984, when I was 12 years old, he was critically burned and permanently disabled in the line of duty. All I ever wanted to be when I grew up was the chief of the fire department in Shreveport. But after the explosion on that fateful day, he nearly died, and it was a long road back, and it changed all of our life trajectories. I'm the oldest of four kids. And my dad, he lived with pain all the rest of his life, for decades more. And I lost my dad to cancer 3 days before I got elected to Congress, 3 days. And he wanted to be there at my election night so badly. I'm the first college graduate in my family. This was a big deal to him. And so several weeks after that, it was early 2017, it was my freshman term, and it fell to me to be in the rostrum one night to serve here as Speaker pro tem. I thought that was a big deal until I figured out that's what you do for freshmen late at night. And I think if my memory serves, Ms. Jackson Lee was winding down one of her long, eloquent speeches. And not that I was not enraptured by her speech, but I looked up at the top in the chamber there, and I saw the face of Moses staring down. And I just felt in that moment the weight of this place, right? The history that is revered here and the future that we are called to forge. And I really was just kind of almost overwhelmed with emotion. It occurred to me in that moment, it had been several weeks and I had not had an opportunity yet to grieve my dad's passing. And I just had this sense that somehow he knew. And I had tears come to my eyes and I was standing here and I'm wiping them away. And then it suddenly occurs to me, the late night C-SPAN viewers are going to think something's very wrong with the new young congressman from Louisiana. It wasn't Sheila's speech, I'm sorry. I just knew in that moment that my dad, my father would be proud of me, and I felt that he was. And I think all of our parents are proud of what we're called to do here. I think all the American people at one time had great pride in this institution, but right now, that's in jeopardy. And we have a challenge before us right now to rebuild and restore that trust. This is a beautiful country. It's the beauty of America that allows a firefighter's kid like me to come here and serve in this sacred chamber where great men and women have served before all of us and strive together to build and then preserve what Lincoln did refer to as the last best hope of man on earth. We stand at a very dangerous time. I'm stating the obvious. We all know that. The world is in turmoil. But a strong America is good for the entire world. We are the beacon of freedom, and we must preserve this grand experiment in self-governance. It still is. We're only 247 years into this grand experiment. We don't know how long it will last, but we do know that the founders told us to take good care of it. I want to tell all my colleagues here what I told the Republicans in that room last night. I don't believe there are any coincidences in a matter like this. I believe that Scripture, the Bible, is very clear that God is the one that raises up those in authority. He raised up each of you, all of us. And I believe that God has ordained and allowed each one of us to be brought here for this specific moment in this time. This is my belief. I believe that each one of us has a huge responsibility today to use the gifts that God has given us to serve the extraordinary people of this great country, and they deserve it, and to ensure that our republic remains standing as the great beacon of light and hope and freedom in a world that desperately needs it. It was in 1962 that our national motto, "In God We Trust," was adorned above this rostrum. And if you look at the little guide that they give tourists and constituents who come and visit the house, if you turn in there to about page 14 in the middle of that guide, it tells you the history of this. And it says very simply, these words were placed here above us. This motto was placed here as a rebuke of the Cold War era philosophy of the Soviet Union. That philosophy was Marxism and communism, which begins with the premise that there is no God. This is a critical distinction that is also articulated in our nation's birth certificate. We know the language well, the famous second paragraph that we used to have children memorize in school, and they don't do that so often anymore, but they should. G.K. Chesterton was the famous British philosopher and statesman, and he said one time, "America is the only nation in the world that is founded upon a creed." And he said it's listed with almost theological lucidity in the Declaration of Independence. What is our creed? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, not born equal, created equal. And they are endowed by the same inalienable rights, with the same inalienable rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. That is the creed that has animated our nation since its founding, that has made us the great nation that we are. And we're in a time of extraordinary crisis right now. And the world needs us to be strong. They need us to remember our creed and our admonition. Turmoil and violence have rocked the Middle East and Eastern Europe. We all know it. And tensions continue to build in the Indo-Pacific. The country demands strong leadership of this body, and we must not waver. Our nation's greatest ally in the Middle East is under attack. The first bill that I'm going to bring to this floor in just a little while will be in support of our dear friend Israel, and we're overdue in getting that done. We're going to show not only Israel, but the entire world, that the barbarism of Hamas that we have all seen play out on our television screens is wretched and wrong, and we are going to stand for the good in that conflict. We have a catastrophe at our southern border. The Senate and the White House can no longer ignore the problem. From Texas to New York, wave after wave of illegal migrants are stressing our communities to their breaking points. We know that our streets are being flooded with fentanyl, and all of our communities, children, and even adults are dying from it. The status quo is unacceptable. Inaction is unacceptable, and we must come together and address the broken border. We have to do it. The skyrocketing cost of living is unsustainable, and Americans should not have to worry about how they're going to feed their family every week because they can't afford their groceries anymore. Everybody in this room should think about this. Here's the stats. Prices have increased over 17% in the last 2 years. Credit card interest rates are at the highest level in nearly three decades, and mortgage rates are now at a peak we haven't seen since 2001. We have to bring relief to the American people by reining in federal spending and bringing down inflation. The greatest threat to our national security is our nation's debt. And while we've been sitting in this room, that's right, that the debt has crossed almost $33.6 trillion. And the time that it's going to take me to deliver this speech will go up another 20 million in debt. It's unsustainable. We have to get the country back on track. Now, we know this is not going to be an easy task, and tough decisions will have to be made. But the consequences, if we don't act now, are unbearable. We have a duty to the American people to explain this to them so they understand it well. And we're going to establish a bipartisan debt commission to begin working on this crisis immediately. Immediately. We all know that we also live in a time of bitter partisanship. It was noted. And it's been on display here today. Right? When our people are losing their faith in government, when they're losing sight of the principles that made us the greatest nation in the history of the world, I think we got to be mindful of that. We're going to fight. We're going to fight vigorously over our core principles because they're at odds a lot of times now in this modern era. We have to sacrifice sometimes our preferences because that's what's necessary in a legislative body. But we will defend our core principles to the end. In his farewell address, thank you. In his farewell address, President Reagan explained the secret of his rapport with people. And I like to paraphrase his explanation all the time. He said, you know, they call me the great communicator, but I really wasn't that. He said, I was just communicating great things. And they're the same great things that have guided our nation since its founding. What are those great things? I call them the seven core principles of American conservatism, but let me concede to you all, I think it's really quintessentially the core principles of our nation. I boil them down to individual freedom, limited government, the rule of law, peace through strength, fiscal responsibility, free markets, and human dignity. Those are the foundations that made us the extraordinary nation that we are. And you and I today are the stewards of those principles. The things that have made us the freest, most powerful, most successful nation in the history of the world. The things that have made us truly exceptional. In this time of great crisis, it is our duty to work together, as previous generations of great leaders have, to face these great challenges and solve these great problems. I will conclude with this. The job of the Speaker of the House is to serve the whole body, and I will. But I've made a commitment to my colleagues here that this Speaker's office is going to be known for decentralizing the power here. My office is going to be known for members being more involved and having more influence in our processes and all the major decisions that are made here, for predictable processes and regular order. We owe that to the people. That's right.
B&H, we've been known for our customer service.
The new Speaker of the House for our Congress here in the United States. Can you even believe it? The man is just blind. He doesn't even see how the actions of his party have put us where we are. But he's gonna make it work. Okay, you guys, I am opening up the phone lines. Remember, This is we're in the final stretch of our funding for our fundraising drive for the fall. There are four ways you can give to help KBOO, a 55-year institution in Portland. We're a community radio station, one of few left in the United States. We're volunteer-powered. We have over 300 volunteers, and less than 10% of the listeners to KBOO are members of KBOO. And I can't tell you, I actually first started volunteering at KBOO in 1994 or 95. I believe it was 94 or 95 when I was doing splice and tape production for Pacifica Reels. And I ended up having to move, so I had to no longer be able to volunteer here. And I started back up a little over a year ago, and I have missed this place so much. Your money goes so far to help people like me who love radio, who love being in this environment. It's uplifting. It's joyful. We have a lot of fun here, and we could really use your help. If you can't make a donation or give during our drives, volunteer. Go to kboo.fm or kboo.org and, get involved. Contact our volunteer coordinator. There's tons of stuff you can do. We ask for, during our fundraising, we ask for a donation so we can keep operating, right? So we can keep going. But our volunteers are gold. They are what keep us moving on a daily basis. So anyways, I'll get off my soapbox. Four ways to give online at kboo.fm/give. Via mobile, you got that mobile app on your phone, right? So go on your mobile app and click donate, and it'll redirect you to the donate portion of the app. You can text us. How easy is that? You can text KBOO to 44321. And finally, you can send us a check. For those of you who are anti-technology, I want nothing to do with it. I have my checkbook and I'm totally happy with that. You can mail us a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, and I'll say that one more time, KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And I am going to open up the lines for to allow you to call now. So you can tell me your thoughts on either the new city commission or this new revelation at the House of Representatives at our national capital. Either one is fine. You can tell me what's on your mind. That works too. It's raining out and it's chilly. So the phone number here is 503-231-8187. I believe I have that memorized. 503-231-8187. And I look forward to talking with you. Let's see, make sure. Yes, 503-231-8187. That is our phone number. And you can call and talk to me about whatever's on your mind. But the subjects that I'm going through tonight are the new city council and the new city governance that was issued or proposed by the charter and then elected or, passed by the city of Portland, the Portland voters, or this abomination in Washington. Either of those works. And while I'm waiting for people to call, I have one more subject I want to give you tonight. So many of you know that in our last gubernatorial election, the candidates paid in the range of $80 million. Can you even believe that? So I think that's utterly ridiculous. When people like Phil Knight are giving millions to a single candidate, something is wrong when they're allowed to do that. Not to mention all of the corporations that and people that give to PACs. So they are giving within the legal limit, but the PAC is allowed to gather up all harvest money. You want to talk about harvesting votes, harvesting money, and then pushing it towards ads and things that support issues that might that this candidate might support, or they're blatantly out there supporting the candidate themselves with messaging, right? Ads, in-kind contributions, cash donations, whatever it is. So while we're waiting for people to call, I'd like to turn this discussion over to campaign finance reform and the impact that it has on people in our state. If the voters in Oregon would pass good governance campaign finance reform, we could do so much. I have a list of all the special interests that impact our governance here in Oregon. And I was tempted to put it into my little dialogue here, but I thought that's another whole show all by itself, listing out all of the special interests and how they impact each and every one of us every year through their donations to elected officials who end up being beholden to them. And campaign finance reform would allow us to level the playing field. So, heck, people like Patrick Starnes wouldn't be held out of debates because he didn't make some arbitrary number of voters following him, contributors, or have an arbitrary number of money in his account that he's using for his campaign. That's ridiculous. Elections, voting for the people we want to represent us should not cost us millions of dollars. I'm sorry. The people who serve us as public officials at one point used to be volunteers, right? And then they did their regular jobs. Why all of a sudden did corporations, why did Citizens United pass? Why did the Supreme Court implement a policy like Citizens United? That's what I want to know. We elect people who, we want to elect people who actually care about our communities and not corporate agendas like those of Phil Knight or even Intel. We have so many corporations. Kroger is not based in Oregon, but they do contribute to PACs at the national level. But even they're influential, right? So they are another large corporation that's infiltrated Oregon, and I'll have to do more research as to their ability to influence our elections. That just happened to come off the top of my head. But we want to elect people who actually care about our communities and not corporate agendas. We want to allow our children to grow up in clean air and good schools. We want to elect people who understand that taking money away from public schools and giving it to like charter schools who don't have to deal with the same standards that public schools do are defeating our ability to be competitive in the global marketplace. Campaign finance reform allows us to take big money out of politics and involve the communities who actually benefit from honest representation and not mouthpieces. If you want to know more about why campaign finance reform is so important, go over to honest-elections.com and click on the Petition 9 link at the top of the menu. So that's honest-elections.com and click on the Petition 9 link at the top in the menu, and you'll learn all you could possibly know about the legislation that Honest Elections, right now they have a petition out that they're trying to gather signatures on, and you'll learn all about why it's important, why we need it, and what else how else campaign finance reform can help us as a community and as a state. So getting back to the extremists on the right, Mike Johnson has been, he was one of the architects of set of the representatives not certifying the elections when Joe Biden won in 2020. He was part of the group that was stonewalling certifications, trying to overturn the election. And worst of all, Trump has endorsed him. And, you know, Trump has 91 felony counts against him. He's been indicted 4 times. He was impeached 2x. I mean, there's nothing on this planet that we do not want more than a Trump lackey as Speaker of the House. We've lived through that already with Mark, the guy that just... we just lived through that. I want to say Mark Meadows, but it's not. So we have already lived through a Trump lackey who made all the deals. Kevin McCarthy. Thank you. That's it. Kevin McCarthy. We lived through Kevin McCarthy for what, the past, gosh, it took him 15 sessions of voting to get voted into being speaker. And I think he was only in for 9 months, maybe something. He wasn't in very long. But he's a Trump lackey. I mean, that's not what we need. We escaped something tremendous by having Jordan not be speaker, but we're right there with this guy. And the reason why it was okay, apparently, for him to be elected speaker was his name was more benign, right? He doesn't have the name recognition as Jim Jordan because he's not allowed obnoxious, whatever Jim Jordan is. Yeah, conspiracy theorist. Trump lackey. He's quieter. He's more in the background. He's apparently quite smart, though I'm not getting that from his presentation this afternoon. Kevin McCarthy was speaker for, let's see, the 55th. Speaker of the House from January to October. Yeah, like 9 months, 10 months. He was Speaker of the House. And what my curiosity is, I wonder what the deal is, because there was a new rule when Kevin came into office or came into speakership that people like Matt Gaetz could make a motion to vacate him, which is what happened to Kevin McCarthy. And it was expected to happen to be in place as well with the new Speaker of the House. So I don't know how this is going to turn out. What kind of deals did he make? What does he plan to do as Speaker? He's talking, right? That's all they know how to do is talk about bringing Democrats over to his view. And you know, he wants to sit there and justify those people saying that this nation was built under Christian fundamentalist ideals, when we all know, anyone who took American history, though a lot of it was a lie, we do know that those people, our founding fathers, were escaping religious persecution when they came over and took over the land here. I mean, the lies and circular logic are just astounding. It's incredible to listen to these people circle around what they know is and tell their people, the people who want to believe them, and they do on a normal basis believe them, that we were founded under Christian fundamental ideals, and we were absolutely not. That's why part of the First Amendment states, you know, freedom of speech, or freedom of speech and freedom of expression and freedom of religion. And that also means freedom from religion. And that's where these evangelical, I'll call him an evangelical Christian because that's what he sounds like, where these evangelicals just kind of miss the train because they're so sucked into trying to convince their congregation that they are the Almighty. So I'm going to get off my soapbox here. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. You can also hear us in Philomath at K282BH on 104.3 FM. And over in Hood River, you're listening to us on K220HR 91.9 FM. I want to thank everybody for letting me talk with you this evening. And this is my first actual radio show. It's in the books now. I had to plan it and everything. So I hope that you are with me in November. I have some super exciting plans for November, December, January, all the way into February. And then we'll get back to regular broadcasting as you know it. And we'll see how Moses does in his race. And we'll keep track of that. Because he's our host, and I want to keep his audience informed in as to what he's doing. And all I can do is say thank you, and let's listen to some Los Lobos.
Something on my mind about the way you've been for a long, long time. You got your mind set up on what you're gonna do.
What you're gonna do?
But let me tell you, baby, your mama getting ready to move. You're my little señorita, y tú eres la más bonita. You got it going on. About a girl like you.
Do, 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 do.
She said a girl like that is gonna break your heart in two. With her sexy legs and hair and nasty looking
one.
Stop right there, mama. You know that's what I want. You're my little señorita. Y tú eres la más bonita. You got it going. Señorita, y tú eres la más bonita. You got it going on. Hey, hey, hey. Oh.
Hey, 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 KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM here in Portland, 100.7.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO's fall membership drive is almost over. We invite you to become a member right now by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to the number 44321. Contribute during this last week of the drive, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $14,000, thanks to the generous support of a group of donors. So hurry and join the KBOO family today and help us meet our $55,000 goal at kboo.fm/give. Together, we can do it.
It's been called the sport of kings, but corruption, animal doping, and bad breeding have made horse racing often stressful, painful, and downright deadly for the horses that are forced to run.
There was no way that I would continue to be engaged in racing and breeding horses while horses were being drugged, breaking down,